the swing moves this way and that. Purport. Sati's mind was divided about whether to go to her father's house or obey the orders of Lord Shiva. The struggle between the two decisions was so strong that she was pushed from one side of the room to another, and she began to move just like the pendulum of a clock. So everyone gets dilemmas in his life. Moments where we have to make very difficult decisions and where both options look undesirable. That's when we get the dilemma, when neither of the solutions that are offered look attractive and we don't know what to choose anymore. And we're walking around, what to do, what to do, what to do. So Krishna consciousness liberates us from this level of dilemma. Because Krishna consciousness just brings us to the point where there's Krishna's desire and nothing else. And then it becomes all very simple and straight. Krishna's desire is furthermore revealed to us through the cyclic succession, by the spiritual master. So there's also, there's not only the scriptures, but also a living person who makes it clear to us what to do and what not to do. Therefore, one who is a follower of Bhagavad Gita is actually free from the mental platform, free from anxiety. Pravitim cha nivritim cha. He knows what to do, what not to do. These questions are no longer a big dilemma. Like sometimes they say, what should be done if there is a pregnancy and the birth of the child might cause a great risk for the mother? Then what should be done? Abort the child or take the risk? Right? A dilemma. A difficult question. Right? Which may confuse people. But if one has transcendental knowledge, then one clearly knows what is to do and what is not to do in such a case. Because we know that we do not have the right to kill. We only have the right to kill in self-defense when there is an aggressor. If someone attacks us with a deadly weapon, then we have. If someone sets fire to the house, then we have rights. Right? If a thief comes to steal wealth and so on, and one becomes involved in some confrontation, then it is allowed. One point that is even allowed, but which we don't recommend, is it is said when someone steals your wife, you also can kill, right, that person without involving karma. You don't become involved in karma. Also one who administers poison. These things are mentioned in Vedic literature. Nonetheless, Vaishnavas are avoiding killing altogether as much as possible. When Lord Chaitanya told Lord Nityananda that in this age we try to kill the false ego, we try to kill the contaminated mentality, we're not trying to kill the living entity itself. So we're actually trying to bring everyone to a platform of being, of changing, and then accepting the ways of Krishna, which will deliver us from the mind. Sati was listening to her mind, and as a result, she was getting caught in between decisions, and there was a dilemma. This is the problem. So one must conquer the mind. The mind is counted amongst the senses in Bhagavad Gita. It is said, Mamaivam so jiva loke, jiva bhuta sanatana, jiva bhuta sanatana. And then the last line is, prakritistani kursati. Oh, yes, that is it. See, I'm mixed up. Can you give me the whole thing then? Mamaivam so jiva loke, jiva bhuta sanatana, manasastrin indriyani, prakritistani kursati. Yeah. Thank you. It is said that one is struggling with the six senses, which include the mind. And this is a fact, that the mind is like the seat of all the senses. Whatever we perceive, what we hear, what we see, what comes in through the senses enters into the mind. And there it stays. And then it just mills around in different thoughts, and all these impressions are strongly with us, and these impressions cause desires, and these impressions are pushing us. So therefore, one must learn to not be controlled by the mind. One must learn to control the mind. That can be done with intelligence, because the intelligence is superior to the mind. And intelligence can become strong by hearing transcendental knowledge. So this is one of the purposes for hearing transcendental knowledge, that we become fixed in intelligence, that we don't just do anything that comes up in the mind. In Vedic literature, it is said that thinking, feeling, and willing are functions of the mind. Of course, that is to say, conditioned thinking, feeling, and willing, material thinking, feeling, and willing. Spiritual feeling and willing comes directly from the heart. That actually comes from the heart. Because these functions of thinking, feeling, and willing are actually functions of the soul. But now, because we are embodied, the soul is in a dormant state within the body. It is said that when the soul enters into the body, then that soul becomes influenced by the body and is as if sleeping, and only a very low percentage of the energy of the soul is actually feeding the body. And then all the functions, which are originally functions of the soul, are now going via the body, via the mind. Then we are perceiving via the mind. So then thinking, feeling, and willing becomes a process of the mind. Therefore, many of our feelings are related to ideas in our mind. So one cannot fully trust his feelings. That is one first principle. Therefore one must, with intelligence, look at his own feelings and decide which ones are good and which ones are not good. Which ones are going to give us beneficial results and which ones are not. There are very simple examples, right, that one may walk in a shop and feel the attraction to put something in his pocket, right? But the intelligence says, no, this is not a good thing, for different reasons. Don't do this. But the urge may be there. There may be many times different urges that we may feel, of which we know that they are not beneficial. So if on a material plane this is a fact, then on a much broader scale, this applies to any situation. So we must, therefore, be strong in transcendental knowledge. Therefore, this Srimad Bhagavatam is so important. Srimad Bhagavatam gives us that perspective. It gives, when we are familiar with the knowledge of Srimad Bhagavatam, then when we are confronted with decisions in life, we'll know what to do. It will be very clear. And everyone gets confronted with difficult decisions. And sometimes we do need support. They have asked me in the past, when my mother was dying and in a coma, whether we should allow euthanasia or not. Right? They came to ask me if we should give her a little injection or not. Right? So One who knows Srimad Bhagavatam has absolutely no problem with such questions. For some people, this may become a very great dilemma, a big dilemma. But if we know Srimad Bhagavatam, then we know the answer is no. No. It's not required that someone would stay alive on a machine and so on, right? But it is also not appropriate to actually administer poison and kill someone. That is not possible. But we need not artificially keep someone alive on a machine. One may disconnect the machine. That's not considered inappropriate. Like that, in Srimad Bhagavatam, we get very refined understanding of what to do, what is auspicious and what is inauspicious, and what our duty is in certain situations. I'm just quickly giving a few examples of dilemmas, you know, that I could think of, right? But we have so many dilemmas that we are facing. And what to do? There are principles, and then there's applied knowledge. So, a spiritual master, a living spiritual master, especially can help us to apply the knowledge, because sometimes it's difficult. Sometimes the circumstances are difficult. Like what to do? Should you send your child to a public school, or should you keep your child at home and teach it yourself through home tutoring, right? To protect it from being influenced by the world and the graded things that are going on in school, which you don't want for your child. Should you? What to do? Dilemma. Again, a dilemma. And not a simple one to resolve, because both situations are not good. It's obviously not good to keep a child at home, all isolated, all on its own, away from social interaction, estranged from other children, just at home being tutored by parents. That won't help. The child will not develop normal social interaction. So you have a problem there. But then, if you send the child to the school, then it starts learning all kinds of things that you don't really want it to learn at all. So what to do? Sometimes there is no ideal solution, right? Sometimes life just means that you have to, as they say, roll with the punches, right? What can you do? Some things you have to accept in life. What can be done? We're living in the world we're living in. I wouldn't do it to my enemies, right, if I had some. I mean, I wouldn't send anyone into this world and say, go live in modern society and be happy if I could avoid it. If I had a better alternative, I would send them somewhere else. But I don't have, because it is Kali Yuga. It is the Iron Age, the age of materialism, the age where there is a lot of craziness in the way of life. There are many things that are just crazy. Like, do you know that with genetic engineering, there are nowadays in many tomatoes, there are scorpion genes? Did you know that big potatoes have pig genes? Just, this is going on. So, there are voices of protest. But there are ministers on the European Communion who are now bringing out the point that we cannot deny these things in the market, right? Because money talks and so on. So life will go that way. What to do? So it is many things in the world. I'm just giving some quick examples here and there to sketch and illustrate my point. The point is that we are living in a world which is not the way we wanted it, and we have to deal with it. We have to accept it. Some things we can change and some things are just beyond us and what to do. And we can decide how far to go and how far not to go and what we can handle. So some struggle will be there. But then we take shelter of Krishna. We try to stay pure. We're chanting our prescribed number of rounds. We follow regulative principles. We engage in devotional service and pray to Krishna for his protection. Knowing well that the world is not ideal, but we pray for protection, that Krishna will somehow or other help us, right, to survive all these the difficulties that we're facing. So these are some of the a devotee knows that Krishna is always there, right, and therefore that Krishna can always do something in any situation. So that shelter is there. And that is a great relief, because otherwise one is basically locked in a world which one has never asked for, right? And then what to do? So whatever may be going on the material plane is secondary to what goes on the spiritual plane. And if we remain fixed on the spiritual plane, then we can also benedict our dependents. There are not only material calculations. For example, to go on with the example of children, there are not only material calculations for benefiting our children, but beyond that, there are also spiritual blessings. And when these spiritual blessings are there, then the material unfavorable circumstances can be just counterbalanced by that. So we rely on spiritual blessings, on the blessings of Krishna. Okay, we also try and make good material arrangements, but that has its limitations. One cannot create an ideal world. Therefore, there are many decisions to be made in this world which are difficult, which are not always favorable. But anyhow, and in some cases, we just know we can't win. You just know you can't win. You can't get the ideal situation, materially speaking, and you just have to tolerate. And within it, create a strong spiritual atmosphere, and then hope that that will carry us and that Krishna will help us to survive. We may have to work in jobs that are not ideal. We may have to associate with people that are materialistic and are not following principles that we are following. And then it's not so easy. If one is a vegetarian and everyone is eating hamburgers around us, it's not easy. That's not inspiring for a vegetarian, obviously, right? One can be tolerant, but it's not inspiring association. It's not inspiring to just drink orange juice in the middle of a bar, right? I knew one devotee who was following everything for 10 years, but he was living in a private situation, and he was still going every Saturday night to the bar, right? He said, "Where else will I go on a Saturday night?" He said, "Yeah, but what are you doing in a bar then, you know?" He said, "Like, well, you know, all my friends are there." He said, "Yeah, but they're all getting drunk." He said, "Like, well, you know, but I'm not drinking. I'm drinking only orange juice." Yeah, but that's like not an ideal situation, because this will obviously, they will influence you. They will influence you. So, therefore one must be careful with the people that he is associating with. Because one develops desires according to the people one associates with, right? I mean, if you live with Italians, you're gonna have pasta and pizza. That's unavoidable. It's just gonna happen, you know? If you live with truck drivers, sooner or later you're gonna have a tattoo, you know? You're gonna get one. There's just one little one. Something. You gotta get a little tattoo, you know, somewhere. Right? This is unavoidable.
So
it's very interesting how the people we're with are going to have an effect on us, on our way of life. And no one is independent. Anyone who thinks he's not affected by other people is an illusion. Right? I mean, no, I'm not affected. I'll do what I want. No, I'm there myself, you know. I'm fully in control of my own life. I will not. They can drink, but I will not. It's not a good program to just say, it is better to just say, I'll keep on going to the bar and have my friends there. Better invite some friends who have similar interests, and have a little get together somewhere else, but not in the bar, because there's different interest. And so therefore, devotees seek out devotees. This is important. When I first came to this movement, I felt a little strange, because there were all these people, and many of them were nice, but it was at the same time, I felt also a little bit on my own. They were all very busy with their things, and I didn't have such close relationships with them, and it seemed difficult. Now, with time, things have changed so much, because now I have friends all over the world. I have so many friends everywhere. Many very good friends, actually. Although some I don't see so often. Still, people that I deeply appreciate and respect. Many. Because it's a wonderful movement that attracts wonderful people. Maybe as a donation, you can go to the copy shop. And hey, before you go, maybe you can go to the copy shop and make a few copies of that book and give it to the temple as a donation. Okay. Okay. What to do? So it's very nice to see that people are dedicating themselves to principles of nonviolence, principles of not causing any suffering to others. So that's nice. That's a good quality in people. Something to be appreciated. Right? Anyone can appreciate. It is nice to see that there are people who are not interested in making a mess of their life by taking so many different types of intoxicants, alcohol, foul stuff, actually, right? How much vomit in how many buckets, right? How many other crazy situations, right? Waking up, looking at someone, who's that, right? How did this happen? The strangest situations can happen after alcohol, if it goes in the larger quantities. Drugs are soft drugs, right? Just simple soft drugs. Don't create such a heavy physical addiction, but certainly a psychological one, and makes the brain very dull, very dull, very slow, makes one very lazy, lethargic, uncoordinated, right? One is not able to function in a structured way in his life. So not going anywhere, becoming chaotic, becoming dirty, becoming gradually less and less coherent, right? Just the result of innocent wheat, right? Then if we speak of heavier drugs, well, they do serious damage in some way or other to the brain, to the body, to the consciousness, and they seem to solve a problem. People take them to solve a problem. And while they are on the drug, it seems that the problem is gone away. But when they come down from the drug, they have two problems. The old problem they had before and the new problem called the drug. Right? And eventually, the drug problem becomes even bigger than any other problem, becomes the main problem. Right? Then one is really in trouble. So it is nice to be around people who've understood that and say, forget it, we don't need these things. It's encouraging to be in such an environment. So in that way, if we look, we see there are many good qualities in devotees that we can appreciate. It is also nice when there are not just totally free sexual relationships. I am from the generation of like 1965, right? When the big cultural revolution started and when every taboo had to be broken, right? And boy, I was into it because I'm kind of like, whatever I do, I usually get into it. I don't like half work, you know. When I do it good. So I was like really into breaking all the barriers, right? If there was a barrier that wasn't broken yet, then it had to be broken, right? So free sex was one of the mottos of the era. John Lennon sang the song, "Why Don't We Do It in the Road?" Right? All with the idea from why this artificial moral imposition? Why this guilt for something that is natural? Right? Why deny something that is in every human being? Animals have no sense of shame. Why do human beings have this false sense of shame? Right? That was the mood of the 60s. And the idea was that once we get rid of all this artificial stuff and we become our real self and real genuine, then everything will become very beautiful. But it didn't become very beautiful at all. It became a total mess, right? This one had, a couple was together and then a third person came and started something with one of the partners and the other one was just looking on and felt, and all in the name of being very liberal and open and, you know, it must all be possible and we cannot be so narrow-minded and moralistic about it. A lot of suffering, actually, a lot of pain and a lot of broken relationships and a lot of children without parents or one parent and so on. And what a mess. What a mess. And finally, diseases. It's like, Amsterdam is full of hospitals, venereal diseases, right? Where one can go and get checked up and treated. Right? Full. Really full. Used to be already in the old days. What to speak of now. So, it is nice to be with people where all this tension is not there. So, when the basics in life are clear and straight, when the basis of one's life is clean and uncontaminated, right, with killing or uncontaminated with just, with illicit sex or gambling, which is bringing about greed, right, and intoxication, then, the basis is peaceful. And then from that peaceful basis, one can deal with various dilemmas which come about due to interaction with the world with a cool head, right? But if one has to deal with the dilemmas, with a head that is totally confused due to too much intoxication, or if one has to deal with a head that is all confused because of so many broken relationships, right? Three children from three different men, right? Want to name examples, you know. I mean, I know many such cases. Three children, three fathers. What a mess, right? What a horrible mess, right? Not nice. It could have been a little better if we would have just lived a better lifestyle. So when the basic lifestyle is sane, with regulative principles, then at least there is some peacefulness, from which we can deal with the material energy. And so then the dilemmas that might arise from material situations are more easy to resolve, even when they are, difficult ones, because we're living in a world which is so different from Srimad Bhagavatam. So sometimes we don't know. Even we have Srimad Bhagavatam and we have very high, nice standards, but sometimes we don't know how to bring them down to the practical level, because the practical situation is so far removed from Srimad Bhagavatam. But then if at least in our private sphere we have a basis rooted in Srimad Bhagavatam, then we can deal with the rest also. Somehow or other, make the best use of a bad bargain. So in this way, a devotee can deal with the dilemmas of material existence much better than anyone else in the world. And therefore, a devotee who's properly fixed up in devotional life can actually develop an inner strength and an inner equilibrium to deal with life, and to keep in mind that there must be a long-term benefit. Don't just do things because they come in your head and you think, yes. Think, well, yes, and then what will be the result of all this? Just like now that I remembered 1965, I remember the Beatles, and I remember the song at Friday morning at 9 o'clock. She was meeting the man of at the motor trade. You know, she's leaving home. Bye bye, right? The story about a young girl who was leaving home and had some appointment with some guy with a motorbike, right? To go somewhere. Good choice or not good choice, right? One who has knowledge from Bhagavatam understands whether it's a good choice or not good choice. Good for the long term? Probably not. Some fun for the immediate? Maybe so, right? But one must act for the long term. Shreyam sada acharanam sadne. Shreyam acharanam sada. One must act for the long-term result. If we want to make this life successful, safalya means successful, giving the right fruits, safalya. So if we want good fruits from our life, then we should work for the long-term benefit. That is one of the basic messages of Srimad Bhagavatam. And I'll leave it with that conclusion also this morning for us to meditate on. One of these reasons why we're going through this Srimad Bhagavatam class in the morning is to help us to remember throughout the day, is that while we are walking in the world, in everyday, caught up in everyday situations, that we remember the transcendental platform. And therefore, this exercise of everyday hearing Srimad Bhagavatam is strong, and it will, and over the years, it gains quite some momentum. This process is not a process that one can fully experience in 1 or 2 days, because it's a matter of building up momentum. Yeah? If we regularly practice, then after some time we begin to feel that it has like a lot of effect. In the beginning, it has some effect, but if we regularly practice, it has a lot of effect. And if we regularly hear this Srimad Bhagavatam, it will have a lot of effect. We will gain so much insight, so much, our whole vision will change. And vision is everything. I give the example of a young boy who was in love with this girl. And he wanted to meet her, and he had like roses, oh yes. And he went to her home, and she lived in a street called Paradise Lane. Oh, yes. And, oh, he came there and he rang the doorbell and there was music playing. Ding, dong, ding, dong. Then she came down, opened the door and said, "What are you doing here?" Right? And the flowers went like, roses hanging down. And she said, "Roses? I'm allergic to roses." And slammed the door in his face. And he turned around, and when he looked, he saw that the street name had changed into Hell's Gate, and there were big Doberman pinchers barking in the street, and it was a dark, dirty street, and he just walked out of the street as quick as he could, right? So it's very interesting how his perception changed, right? On the way in, he was in Paradise Lane, and on the way out, he went to Hell's Gate. The same place, but a totally different perception. And it is exactly like that, right, with us as well. That it is said, Atmavan Manyate Jagat, one perceives the environment through one's own consciousness. According to the state of consciousness, we look at the world. And that is actually how a devotee, by regularly hearing Srimad Bhagavatam, gradually begins to see the world in a different perspective and begins to see everything in relation to Krishna. Then that devotee becomes very satisfied within and unaffected by the external circumstances which inevitably will present happiness and distress. Right? So, therefore, this hearing of Bhagavatam and chanting of the holy name in every day in a regular fashion is very important. So, I'll stop now. Are there any questions or comments?
I would like to say about what you said about lifestyles and this and that. But today, even if you try to live nice lifestyle, I just recently heard two stories. One is that the girl got pregnant, she was raped by her employer, and she is chanting and she's a vegetarian, she is going to get the
issue. Yeah.
She gave birth to a child, she was here.
Okay.
And the other one is that somebody served to somebody in Ukraine, it was about some meat eater, some meat meal, and after that, that person said, "You know what that meat was? That was human meat. I was killed by chance in the forest. Somebody who was picking up berries, and then I understood what I can do. I made sausages, and I put sausages into the refrigerator, and now I serve this to you. Is it nice? You like it?" And this is too like.
Okay, these are two
of.
Right.
Or so
yeah, you have to be very careful. Very careful. You have to be careful. So therefore, you cannot trust any sausage. So eat no sausage at all, because you never know what's inside. And, you know, don't eat in the house of strangers, right? You know, as far as accepting a boss, right? You better watch out. But if one does, if you do get raped and if you do get a child, anyway, then you think like, I have this bad karma that these things are happening to me. Anyway, somehow or other, now I have this child. Let me then try and be a good parent. Right? And let me not just forever wonder and meditate on how this all happened. Let me just accept it. Because every situation has two causes. The immediate cause and the ultimate cause. The immediate cause is the boss who raped the girl. The ultimate cause is the Supreme Lord. That everything goes on by the will of Krishna. So somehow or other some karma was involved by which that girl had to go through that. So we should also have some vision like that. We should also see that Krishna is behind, my karma is here. So some things are going to happen to me that are not going to be so good, but I'll have to deal with them and make them into the best possible situation I can. Like that child could become a great devotee. So then it wouldn't be so bad, right? Then we wouldn't hold it against the devotee, you know, if you say like, your father raped your mother, right? We wouldn't like rub it in, you know, if someone is a nice devotee. So that's certainly more important. Yeah. So one can turn it around. And this is the art for a devotee, to try and turn around inauspicious things into something auspicious. And we all have to do that. Because sooner or later, if we start talking about our life, everybody has some stories to tell. Yeah. Everybody. If we go that way, everybody's got some story, some skeletons in the closet and some stories to tell. Right? Anyone else? Kurang. Yeah, Kuranga Prabhu has read that when we go asleep, that we are going to Parabrahman in the heart. Do I have any more detailed information about that? No, I don't. Srila Prabhupada on many occasions, while speaking about sleeping, was referring that that we are traveling, astral travels. Right? That we, if we, in our dreams, go places, that we actually go these places. Prabhupada sometimes mentioned that we go during our dreams, travel outside the body while sleeping. And so we hear only bits and pieces of information what happens when we're sleeping, but it seems that at least we are actually moving into other realms, other dimensions. We are not always exactly situated in the body as it is. And sometimes when someone wakes you up, you feel like you're coming from very far. Right? Very, very far. Phew. Where was I? Boom. So that's about the only comments I can make on sleeping and anything related that I have heard or read. And it's a detail. Most important is that we understand that we are indeed separate from the body. And that these things reconfirm that we are separate from the body. And that is something so fundamental and so important to remember again and again, every day. That we remember that we're separate from the body. That's like a daily meditation, practically. We're not this body. So I feel that part of the purport of that message is that we are not the body. Any other question? Grum. Mm. Yes. Lord Chaitanya, at different points, takes the mood of Lord Nrisimha. The idea is this, is that Lord Krishna is none other than Lord Chaitanya, who appeared, Lord Krishna appeared in this planet 5,000 years ago, Lord Chaitanya 500 years ago, but both are eternally existing in the spiritual world. Then there are many incarnations of the Lord as well. It is said that the first expansion of Krishna is his brother Balaram. From Balaram expand the forms of Vasudev, Sankarsan, Padyumna, Aniruddha, and then from them expands Lord Narayan. From them again a second feature of Vasudev, Sankarsan, Padyumna, Aniruddha, and then so many Vishnu forms are manifesting. And it's said that Lord Nrisimhadev is one of the Vishnu forms of the Lord. So Lord Krishna expands himself in innumerable forms, anantarupam. Now, the point is that all these forms exist separately, but yet they also are one, because they're all the all-pervading Supreme Lord. So in one sense, all these Vishnu forms are one, are the one Supreme Lord in many forms, and he is conscious of his different forms, because he has an all-pervading consciousness. So it's not that he's separate. So Lord Chaitanya also includes Lord Nrisimha. And Lord Chaitanya showed that by taking the form of Lord Nrisimha on the appearance day of Lord Nrisimha. Not fully, but taking the mood, and so much so that everyone became very afraid. Right? So this is Nrisimha Chaitanya. So another aspect of Nrisimha Chaitanya then is, so Lord Chaitanya had the Nrisimha mood, right? But at the same time, he was still Lord Chaitanya. So then even Nrisimha, right, takes a bit of the Chaitanya mood, right? So in this age, the age is predominated by Lord Chaitanya. And the age is predominated by the mood of Lord Chaitanya, of giving the mercy. Therefore, all the other features of the Lord, all the other manifestations of the Lord are also touched by this Chaitanya atmosphere that is so predominant now. Therefore, even Lord Nrisimhadev gets a touch of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's mood, and even Radha and Krishna are getting something of that mood, and therefore the mood to distribute the mercy to everyone and freely is more manifest in Lord Nrisimhadev at this time than in any other time, due to the presence, due to the predominant presence of Lord Chaitanya. It is described that Lord Chaitanya changes the entire atmosphere. He simply smiles upon the whole universe, and the whole mood in the whole universe is changed. And it is therefore that people suddenly take up spiritual life. That suddenly they wonder, what about the truth? What about spiritual life? I'm interested in spiritual life. And we thought it was us, but it was actually Lord Chaitanya smiling. And because he smiled, he brought it out of us. And because he smiles, his mood also reflects to some extent in the mood of Nrisimha. So then we're getting Nrisimha Chaitanya. Nrisimhadev is present in his deity forms. So Nrisimhadev is present. More? No. Okay. Thank you all very much. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.
Every day has been a festival. Oh, and my bones. Ordinary day. So after Prasad, huh? come to Germany, but now they're missing.